From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when a pair of women, a non-denominational minister, a former New York State Teacher of the Year, and an author and a musician, were struggling perhaps with the question of how to live as their true selves. Now, they were both married to men, as they describe it, wonderful men. They had children, grandchildren. They were teachers in local school districts. But for years, both Barb and Roz knew that perhaps they had to change the way they were talking about themselves and the way that they were talking to the people they loved. They lived in fear of being outed. Eventually, they decided they had to overcome fear and live authentically. As Barb says, instead of running from their true selves, they looked fear square in the face. They became a couple. They found love and the comfort of being out. And they, sitting here in the studio with me, seem pretty happy today. This is about their story, but it's also a national story. They made these changes before national public opinion largely shifted. Here are the newest numbers from Pew. Now, let's go back to 2004, 15 years ago. 60% of Americans opposed same-sex marriage in 2004. Today, 61% of Americans support it. The numbers have almost exactly flipped in 15 years. This hour, a conversation with Barb and Roz about their remarkable lives and about how they see the country changing and how they changed, or perhaps changed in how they thought of themselves and the way they should be living. In the studio, we welcome them both, Barb Adams and Roz Pallera. It's great to have both of you here. Thank you for being here. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Evan.
Barb reached out to me not long ago. In fact, I think it was last week. We had had a conversation with a group of Jewish women who they put together a number of projects and events throughout our community. And one of the projects over the years was anti-homophobia. They talked about how over the years, the need for that has lessened in schools, that there's more acceptance. And Barb, you decided to send me an email. What moved you that day?
Well, I think it's so important, and thank you for replying. And I think it's so important that the younger generation, as well as the community at large, understands what the gay and lesbian community, what individuals have gone through. The younger people now, they're essentially standing on our shoulders. And we are standing on the shoulders of those who came before us, you know, before Stonewall. This would not have been possible. Before marriage rights, this would not have been possible. But even when Roz and I were struggling with the decisions, very many decisions that we had to make, there was this need about needing to be ourselves. And honey, why don't you speak more about that?
Well, one of my favorite words is authenticity. And once one is authentic, one has something that nobody can take away. But it's quite a road to travel, and it was a road for both Barb and me, and I have to speak for myself here, of course, in that for many, many years, I tried to change. So I know what some of these kids, even in the modern era, when we say homosexuality is accepted and we have same-sex marriage, still bullies abound. And still these kids have difficulties. They turn to drugs. Some of them commit suicide. Still, the society is not quite what it should be. Getting back to Barb and me, it was, as I said, it was a very, very difficult road. I tried to change for many years, and thus I married this wonderful man. However, I knew I couldn't change. It was, you know, it was just something that cannot be changed. A person is a person is a person. And one has to live with whoever one is. So there it was. And I had to be brave. And, you know, I'm hoping for the kids nowadays who have difficulty coming out. And actually, you know, I don't like that term. I prefer being authentic. They have difficulty being authentic. They have to be brave. They have to do it because they owe it to themselves. I know that sounds preachy, but there it is. It's from someone who is had lots of experience and that sort of thing. So where are we now? So we're talking about history. We're talking about what we did So, Barb, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Yeah, well, we had...
By the way, I love this couple, and if you want, I'm just going to come back in an hour. I'm going to listen. Because I'm so happy you're here.
And, thanks, Evan.
And I just... There's so much, such warmth in the studio. But anyway, don't let me interrupt. Go ahead.
No, that was great. You know, I'm going to go back a little bit in time. As a youngster, mm-hmm. I was termed a tomboy. You know, I enjoyed rough and tumble things. I enjoyed sports. I was inquisitive. I was out there playing. And
where'd you grow up, by the way?
I grew up on Long Island, mm-hmm. Huntington, Long Island. Mm-hmm. And saying that, I don't want that to come across as anyone who is rough and tumble and in sports has a sexuality difference, because that's not the case. But what I was finding is that my true self was trying to emerge and to be expressed. And that was wonderful until society came in and told me who not to be, to not be myself. The church came in. I was brought up Roman Catholic. As far as the messages that I was receiving from the pulpit, I was going to go to hell. I was damned. I was bad. I was a sinner. So who in God's name would want to identify with that part of oneself? So I was convinced that I could change.
Let me, I don't want to interrupt the narrative,
no,
but I want to understand better.
Sure.
When those messages, you're receiving those and you're internalizing them, you're how old?
I'm 11, 12,
wow. Mm-hmm.
13.
Okay. And that, to me, I want to make sure I understand what you're really saying is you felt like it wasn't just that you were a tomboy.
Correct.
Who liked to play with the boys.
Correct.
But you felt your own sexuality and you were getting explicit messages that that cannot be, that you are damned if that is who you are.
Exactly.
Who was there a leader in the Catholic Church, mm-hmm. in where you grew up, mm-hmm. saying that to you? Were you, was it in literature? How was that message getting to you?
All of the above.
Uh-huh.
It was very clear through some of the preaching that homosexuality was a sin. Certain Bible passages were quoted, Leviticus specifically. And also the unspoken words of what a family looks like, what a relationship, a love relationship looks like. The message that I got, the messages that I got, was that I was to move forward as my parents and extended family moved forward, marry a man and have children. I want to say one thing here. I always wanted children. One's sexuality does not determine whether one wants children or not. I always wanted children. But I thought that I had to follow the mold and fit into the mold. Honey, do you want to speak to that?
Well, I definitely wanted children. You know, we're women first, and our sexuality is only one part of us.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to what you said about religion, not only religion showed us images of the heterosexual couple and heterosexual life were all over.
Mm-hmm.
They were in films. They were in the greater family. They were everywhere. And if one was different, it was a shock. Let me go back to something else. You asked Barb when she was aware of her sexuality. I was aware of my sexuality at age 11. I can spot the day there was a girl in school and I developed a crush. And something turned me inside out. I knew I wasn't supposed to do that. I wasn't supposed to feel that. And I wanted to feel, I wanted to be boy crazy. I wanted to feel what the other girls felt, but it didn't work. And I tried and tried and tried.
But,
it didn't work.
But try. There's a lot of people with individual stories about how they internalized this idea that, well, either homosexuality is a sin, you're going to hell, you can't do it, society doesn't accept it. How long did you try to convince yourself that either this isn't me or I can make myself like the boys?
Years. Actually, until I met Barb and I was 41. So it went on forever. And it's something in life to be in conflict with yourself over such a basic entity. It is, you're walking around and you are essentially a shadow of yourself. I lucked out in that I have many interests. I have music, all the arts. And when I say I lucked out, they saved me from what I think kids are going through today. Even though the society is more open, still, kids who are homosexual do have this burden. They've got it. I mean, you read the newspaper, read about suicides. So it is really something to be a shadow of yourself, to walk through society carrying on all the stereotypical things that you think are accepted, and you're just in constant conflict. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful to find Barb and to be who I am. I mean, I can't tell you how it was to just shirk off this shroud.
You were how old when you got married?
When I got married, I was 29.
And how old were you, Barb, when you got married?
25.
You know, in your email, you said you married wonderful men.
Yes.
And you had children and you have grandchildren.
Yes.
Knowing that you had tried for years to wrestle with who you both knew you were authentically, did you feel like marriage could change you? Did you feel like that was, look, this is my lot in life. This is the best I can do. I do want children. This is a wonderful man. I will live this way. Did you fear it? I mean, I'm curious to know. And again, I'm going to say this for them and the audience. We're pushing in a lot of very personal directions, and they're very open, but nobody has to talk about this stuff. I ask because I think it is instructive for people who are going to struggle with it themselves. How did you feel about getting married, Russ?
First of all, I think it's instructive, too. I wanted to get married. I recall when I was 5 years old, and I was a musician at the time. I sang, and I said, I'm going to marry a musician. And I found this wonderful man, Frank Pallera, and we did get married, and it was great. However, I just wasn't myself. Even though I was, and I hate to say this, but in a sense, I was going through the motions and going through the motions of being heterosexual. And I forced myself to do it. And basically, I'm a strong person, and I knew I could do that. But guess what? I couldn't. It didn't work. I met Barb, and I felt this attraction, and I knew that was truth. That was authentic. So there it is.
You met her when you were 41?
Yes.
Were you still married at the time?
I was still married at the time.
Okay.
And we were very cool. We were friends. And yet we had this underlying attraction that we tried desperately to avoid it and to be true to our families. And we were. And yet you cannot change who you are.
Hmm. How did you feel about getting married, Barb?
I want to go back a little bit in time and remind some of the listeners, or maybe inform some of the listeners, that before 1973, the American Psychological Society and the AMA listed homosexuality as a mental illness. Now, as a graduated from college and started to feel all of the stresses that go with moving into life, I became very depressed and very anxious. And for that, I sought help. The diagnosis was homosexuality. And I was subjected to conversion therapy. And after 16 bouts of this conversion therapy, excuse me, they gave me a clean bill of health and essentially said, "You're cured." Well, I sure as hell wanted to believe that I was cured because I wanted to live the American dream. I met this wonderful man. I shared with him what my fears were about my sexuality. And he said, "Oh, I'm sure everything's fine." So I felt that I had done my duty in sharing and in being honest. And I really didn't want to talk about it anymore. And he didn't pursue a conversation on that any longer. And we did marry and had two beautiful children, a girl and a boy, now adults. And as I continued to struggle with my sexuality through the marriage that I tried to push down and I tried to ignore and I tried to say that this is not who I am, you can't lie to your true self. When I met Roz and felt that attraction, I tried to pretend that it wasn't there. I tried to say again, "I can change, God dang it, I can change." And you know, really for the listeners, a way to maybe make sense of this is imagine being born into a world where everyone is gay or lesbian or bi, and you're born into it straight, and you have to try to live as if you're gay, lesbian, or bi. And imagine the difficulty that you would have with that. Knowing my strong attraction for Roz and knowing that my health was not, physical health was really waning, my then husband said to me early one morning, "We need to talk." And it was very plain and clear that what we were trying to hold together as a marriage and a beautiful family really needed to be addressed. And I came out to him.
Unequivocally,
I said, "I'm a lesbian." And we both cried and we hugged. And he said, "We need to get divorced." I said, "I know." And of course, our first concern was our kids. And I'm not going to go into that area right now, but let me leave it that it was very difficult for my children and it was very difficult for our little family.
You use the word lesbian, Barb. I'm really surprised because Barb usually doesn't like that word.
I say gay woman.
Gay woman.
I'm more comfortable Barb's, with gay woman.
Can you help me with it? Because I don't want to use terms that people don't
know. No. You're right. You know, it's just, no. You're absolutely right, Evan. You're right.
Okay.
It's just a personal preference. I prefer to refer to myself as a gay woman.
Yeah. Lesbian is a true term.
Yeah. Know? Ellen DeGeneres is the same way. She prefers gay woman. Not that I'm copying her.
You worked together, is that right? How did you know each other?
Go ahead, honey.
We met at a camp. our kids were going to a Girl Scout camp. I mean, it's sort of, you know, one of the little ironies of life. Nonetheless, we met there, and actually we sang together. Barb played guitar, and we sang.
You wanted a musician, Russ.
Yeah, I got one.
And we're laughing now, but you know, Barb opened up about this very difficult story.
Yes.
And I'm sure the last thing you wanted to have to tell a man that you cared about and loved in different ways than maybe
That's
a
right.
married couple would mm-hmm. love each other, is that this is the reality, and it there's not a roadmap for dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
How did you go about that, Russ?
I just had to follow my true self, and that was all there was to it. And Frank and I developed an understanding, and I left him. That was it. We still loved each other. Frank died a few months ago.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a big loss. We loved each other. He was a good friend, a good father. We had so much in common. Frank and I had a communication that really I don't have with anyone else, aside from the sexuality thing. It was a person-to-person thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he understood. He understood that I had to go my way. And that's, you know, when Barb says we married wonderful men, that's part of it. My kids were very understanding. They were wonderful. There was one birthday when they were both older teens, and it was my birthday, and I said, I need a gift from you. And I came out to them. I really don't like that term. I said, I am a lesbian. And they were wonderful. They accepted it. There were no ands, ifs, or buts. Okay, Mom. So that was it. And part of the reason for their acceptance, I believe, is because their father was such an accepting man.
Mm-hmm.
A musician who had, you know, played with many people from all different avenues of life, and he was relaxed with whomever he was with. So he was that kind of person, more than tolerant. He was open.
Can I add to that, honey?
Surely.
And then once a week, Frank would come over the house, and Roz and Frank would have coffee and talk and shoot the breeze, so to speak.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I would sit down, and the three of us would have a conversation, and it could be shooting the breeze, or it could be, an intellectual inquiry into something, because he was such an inquisitive man. And
yes.
then I would make my big pot of soup and always send home containers for Frankie.
And Frank loved Barb.
We loved each other.
Really? It was,
yeah.
It was phenomenal.
Yeah. I was, may I say this, when he passed?
Of course.
That Roz and I were in the room with him. The girls were there all night.
Okay.
And I was able to join Roz. And when I walked in, he said, Barbie, I knew they couldn't keep you away. I was able to, at his okay, share some prayers with him. And Evan is just an amazing thing. I'm gonna just switch to Carl for a minute here. Carl, my former husband, rents a house for the past few years for the family vacation. We'll go to different states. And he has invited Roz to come and join us for our family vacation. Now, circumstances have kept Roz from being there, but you don't find situations like this. You don't find people like that. You don't find this kind of love and this kind of outreach and this kind of understanding and this commitment to be loving and to wanting to, and wanting to our children and our grandchildren to feel the love rather than any kind of angst or bad mouthing. There is love.
You know, love, I don't think, has sexuality. Love is clean. Love doesn't have that kind of boundary. Mm-hmm. Yeah, getting back to Carl, Carl and I have a great rapport. Whenever there's a gathering, like a birthday party or something like that, Carl and I will sit next to each other and chat away, and I have a rapport with him that I don't have with anybody else, really.
You bought your car insurance from
wonderful.
Him.
It did. Yeah, he was my insurance agent.
Talking to Barb Adams and Roz Pallera, telling their stories as living their authentic selves. And you've been together now for how long?
Over 30 years.
We met in 1984.
We were not together then.
That's correct.
Wasn't until we formed Paradox, really.
Yeah,
which
our first
our
concert.
Our musical group.
Yeah, our first concert was in 92 at the auditorium.
You waited years to get together?
We have families. We had to work through things.
Yeah.
Our kids, yeah. We didn't live together till 95 when my youngest went off to college. And then Carl moved back in the family house so that the kids would still have home. Home would still be home when they came home.
Yeah, another little irony is we're in the process of building a house, Barb and I, and we had to move into the small apartment. And, you know, like, where do we put our extra clothing? Where do we put, for example, our books? And they're at Carl's house.
There's so much beauty in this story. This is, I just got a message from a listener who said, what a cool show. People could learn a lot about how to live from this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That's why when Barb reached out, I said immediately, we've got to bring you in, because it is not to say that anybody is urging anybody to give up on a marriage or Mm-mm. give up on a relationship, et cetera. But it is to say that what limited views we have of how things are supposed to go, what our sexuality is supposed to be, what divorce is supposed to look like, what family relationships have to be, what conflict has to be or not. Barb and Roz have helped us see it doesn't have to be that way. And love is hard. And when you love someone that you can't be with, it doesn't mean that you don't care about them. And that can be a long process. And now we think about all of our, you know, our friends and neighbors and family members in the LGBTQ+ community, and you think about what they might fear. I mean, Barb and Roz didn't go through this last year or 5 years ago. This started in 1984. Pew Research said 15 years ago, 20 years after they decided to live authentically. I'm not going to use the phrase coming out. 20 years after that, 60% of Americans still oppose same-sex marriage. So after our only break of the hour, we're going to talk about what they've seen, particularly in the last 15 years, that has really swung those public opinions. But, you know, it doesn't mean that we're at the destination. I don't know if you ever get there, but where we're going as a society. And I also want to talk about a few other things. I mean, Barb is a minister, a non-denominational minister. They're goes to Spiritus, right?
I do go to Spiritus, yes, and I preach other places.
You know, so a lot of gay people, gay Catholics in particular, have wrestled with faith, wrestled with what that means to be told by the faith leaders in your church that you can't be who you are, and why Barb is still a person of faith despite that. So there's a lot more to work through with Barb and Roz on this Friday afternoon. Let's get our only break of the hour. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, what's going on in Ukraine? We put the lens not just on Ukraine, but on developing democracies. We'll talk about rhetoric, populism, and more. In our second hour, it was 20 years ago that American Beauty won the Oscar for Best Picture. Now, it is almost routinely viewed as a mockery. Why is that? What changed? And is it inevitable that future generations will feel the same about Best Pictures now? Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Barb Adams and Roz Pallera are with us, and they have been a couple since 1992, and they married men, wonderful men, as they describe, and clearly the descriptions of Carl and Frank, you can see why they say that. how fortunate they were to marry such wonderful men. But they came to decide they had to live as their authentic selves as gay women, and they have been a couple since 1992. Now, in 1984, when both of you take this big step in your lives and you live authentically, I mean, again, the term might be coming out, even though our guests don't really like that term, but that's to familiarize it. Would you have said 35 years ago that this country will embrace same-sex marriage, it will be legalized, and that there will be a sea change in public opinion on it? Barb?
Absolutely not. Back then, I never would have said that. It was the dark ages back then, and it was very dark back then in my mind and in my life. A big influence in my life, throughout my life, has been my church. And when I recognized that the Orthodox Catholic Church was not in my corner, I had to make some decisions, and that was very difficult for me. But I'm going to mention Spiritus Christi here because that was an oasis, really, in a very parched desert. Father Jim, Reverend Mary, and now Reverend Myra, that is literally a sanctuary. It is a sanctuary for souls who are celebrating and for souls who are aching. And when you enter that place of worship, you are embraced completely.
When did you find them?
Roz and I started going when they were still Corpus Christi, mm-hmm. on East Main. And when Father Jim was excommunicated by the church for celebrating same-sex, at the time unions, wanting to bring women on the altar and allowing anyone who wished to receive communion to receive. When he was excommunicated, and then Reverend Mary Raymerman, really gathered us all together within her loving bosom, and there were so many people who supported and still support their mission and their ministry that there was no stopping this movement. And Spiritus Christi is not part of the Roman Catholic Church. I'm a member there. We identify as Catholic, but not Roman Catholic. And so we have the freedom to pursue the offshoot ministries that are life-giving to individuals. Among them, LGBTQT community, as well as other individuals in the society who are struggling.
And now, as a non-denominational minister, you still do work in that regard?
I was ordained 2 years ago by Pathways of Light Spiritual College. And I started my own ministry called Peace and Harmony Ministry. And I meet with individuals who are struggling spiritually, personally. And my approach is through spiritual healing, which essentially is saying recognizing the truth of who you are. And that is spiritually, personally, whatever that means to someone, because even if someone is not, doesn't believe in God, let's say, doesn't believe in spirit, doesn't believe in an afterlife, they can still have a spiritual belief that there is something greater than themselves, and to tie into whatever that something greater than themselves is a way to, as I say on my website, I try to just hold the light to allow them to follow their path to their oneness and to their awakening in whatever form that is to them. My goal is to meet with the LGBTQ community individuals, whether they are youngsters or people, senior citizens like myself, or anywhere in between, to help them remember their love, the love for themselves and the love of who they are.
May I go back to your original question? Mm-hmm. when the curtain lifted and gay marriage was okay, I thought it was a miracle. I mean, I couldn't believe that in my lifetime such a thing happened. And it, I'm an optimist at heart and an idealist, and I'm so glad that humanity, that the United States, came to this realization that gay people are okay and they are entitled to a life just as everybody else is entitled to a life. They are entitled to the pursuit of happiness and to happiness itself. I mean, it was a revelation. It was wonderful. I love it. So I have a ministry too. It's music. Music and art, and I find great spiritualism in music and art. And as I said earlier in the program, music was what saved me and kept me sane. And I push music. I push art for everybody. It's wonderful.
Honey, you should talk a little bit about your memoir or the... we've grown into
literature.
Who we are, into literature. Go ahead, honey.
Yeah, I'm into literature deeply. I've written two novels. I'm right now writing a memoir. This is another part of art that I think is so spiritual. I don't know what else to say about it, Barb. Fiction's great.
It's wonderful that you've had these outlets, but you've also talked about how important it was to have these personal relationships around you and to find support. Did you encounter opposition from anyone in your close circle, friends, family, others who said...
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead, honey.
Oh, yes. I had a very dear friend, a longtime friend, who said, what you've done to Frank, I can't believe. I don't like your lifestyle. And that's another term that I have a problem with. I don't have a lifestyle. I have a life. Mm-hmm. We have since come to an understanding. And actually, she has forgotten she ever said that. But, the listener, the speaker often forgets. The listener never forgets. So it was that kind of thing. Yes, family members. Oh, and this is interesting. My previous in-laws, I guess, considered me a bad woman for leaving Frank. But now, through the years, and I think this is really a statement as to the authenticity of Barb's and my relationship, all of those previous in-laws have accepted us, invite us to their family gatherings, give us a kiss when they see us, and all seems well. That took years, but it did happen. Barb?
I have, on my father's side of the family, I have some uncles who are ministers in a different denomination. And one of my uncles and his wife essentially disowned me. Because as my aunt said in the book that she wrote, that homosexuality is a reprobate. And I tried reaching out to them to say that I'm still the same little girl they loved and welcomed into their home, but they don't seem to want to acknowledge that. When I was teaching, which was at the height of when we were really making a decision on whether to come out or not, I had to be in the closet at school because teachers could have lost their jobs for being gay. And that was very, very difficult. And as Roz and I were becoming a more authentic couple, I finally decided that it's important that I'm authentic at school. And I shared with one of my administrators, I said, I would like to come out to my students because I believe it's important that they have a positive role model here. And I said, you know who I am. You know about me. And that administrator at first was, okay, we can do that. And then as it went higher up in the ranks, I was brought into a meeting and essentially said, told that this would not be good for the district to come out. And as I pressed that, that same statement came back to me. So I had to give that some thought, whether to lose my job or to continue to struggle. And what was interesting is that following weekend when Bishop Clark offered the healing mass at the cathedral, Roz and I were there. We came out of the cathedral holding hands, and a news person came up to us with a camera and a mic and said,
I forgot that.
Oh, that's yeah. Right. Said, can we interview you? And that conversation with administration at my school district went through my head, and I said,
honey, I forgot what you said. Were you interviewed?
We were, sweetheart. I said, yes, we would love to be interviewed. Nothing was said the next day.
Were you fearful about that, or did you think, you know what, let's do this?
It was, come on, let's do this, because I was gaining my chutzpah, and I was claiming my life. And the only thing that was interesting, well, and I don't know how much time we have left, was that there was a reaction from some students who were giggling at me and passing notes. And I gathered up one of the notes, and it said, she's a lesbo. And I brought the students in the hall, and I said, haven't you always been comfortable in my classes? Yes. Have I ever tried to attack you or embarrass you in any way? No. Why would you want to do that to me? Why would you want to do that when you know who I really am and how I really care for you? And all she did was just bow her head and say, I'm sorry, Miss Adams, I'm sorry. So I didn't want to condemn her, but I wanted her to think on another level of how I reached out.
I suspect that conversation is still remembered by that student today.
I hope so.
Powerful. Let me read just a little bit of feedback. Benjamin sends us a note and is just very grateful. He says, the beauty of their story is the antithesis of what we see so much of today. Beautiful and so happy that they can and are sharing it. I want to grab a phone call from Beatrice, who's also calling from Rochester and wants to weigh in. Go ahead, Beatrice. Hi, Beatrice. Are you there?
Yes. Hi. How are you?
Very good. Go ahead.
Good. I just want to ask a question. One of the guests you have mentioned the book of Leviticus.
Yes.
And I wanted to know if she wouldn't mind saying a little bit about that verse and if it has anything to do with homosexuality. I take it that it does. That's why she mentioned it.
Yes. It's in Leviticus, and I can't quote chapter and verse.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, the mention of that a man should not lay or lie with another man, and that is used as one of the ways of the church or those who pick and choose from the Bible and interpret it their way to condemn another.
Okay. Very good. That is absolutely beautiful. You couldn't have explained it better. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Beatrice. I appreciate that phone call. I'm sure you get a lot of questions about what is actually said versus what some assumptions are that religious texts say.
Yes. And you know what's so eye-opening to me, and Roz knows where I'm going with this, is I had been attending Unity Church, and so many of their principles I really enjoy, and reading Eric Butterworth's Discover the Power Within helps me to understand really the breadth of the interpretations within the Bible, and that much what that has been interpreted in the past is really taken out of context, and rather than a condemning God, we're talking about an open and loving God.
Let me read a couple of emails. First, this comes from a woman who asks us not to share her name.
Mm-hmm.
She says, this sounds a lot like my current story. Found my person at 40, mm-hmm. and we both have young kids. Once you know, you know. Once you feel this kind of love and connection, there is no denying it. Unfortunately, my ex is not a great man, and it has not been easy. Additionally, my choice to be with my person came with losses. I lost my ex's family, which was mine, and my parents. My parents are willing to continue to have a relationship with me, but I know they believe that who I am is wrong, and I am not willing to accept that. They are Catholics, and I have pleaded with them to think and see me, but they think they are being true to their faith by continuing to believe that homosexuality is wrong. My love for my person is wrong to them, and that is not okay with me. Therefore, I no longer have my parents. All that being said, I am so lucky to be me with my person and experience life and love like I never have before.
That's so
wonderful.
Beautiful.
Wonderful. Be brave. Be brave. Be brave in knowing who you are and the love that you have. They'll come through.
One of the things that I do when I meet with for spiritual counseling is something called healing the inner child. And I meet with individuals, if she would like to meet with me, I'm very happy to do that. I can give you, Evan, my website in a little while if you'd like that.
Why don't you do it right now? Let people know how to contact you.
All right. My website is www.peaceandharmonyministry.org. And my email is revbarb@peaceandharmonyministry.org.
Jillian writes to us to say, a response to your question regarding did your guests ever think things would change the way they have? Do you all keep in mind that it can easily swing back the other way as a backlash of sorts to the changes, such as the way white supremacy has seen a severe resurgence worldwide, which can be largely attributed to the civil rights movement consummating with Obama's election? Jillian is essentially saying, do you fear that progress can be rolled back? Right.
Definitely, I do. I definitely do in this particular climate. And that's why it's so important for everybody, each individual, to get out there and vote, to get into the process, to really see what's happening, and to make their voices heard. That is so important. We've always got to keep our foot on the gas, keep it going, be informed, do something. We can't just lay back. That is so important. I'm so glad you brought that up. Yes, things can change, as the cliche goes, on a dime.
I'd like to add to that, too. It's so important that when derogatory terms are used or if someone is being discriminated against, it's so important for anyone who's present or witnesses this to stand up, because one silence indicates that one agrees with what is being said.
That's a hard lesson for kids. It's one thing I talked about with my 7-year-old, you know, which is that it is not enough to not join in when people are bullying, when people are hurting others. The challenge, but the need is to try to stop it and to put a foot down. In our last couple of minutes, briefly, you've got some spiritual siblings in the Methodist Church who are wrestling with what to do about their own church's international doctrine, which goes back to the 1970s, which is homophobic and bigoted, and there could be a fissure in that church. Asbury First is considering a lot on their own plate in the next year or so. What would be your message, and I'll ask you on this, Barb, for your spiritual siblings over at Asbury First and in the Methodist Church?
Well, first of all, what immediately comes to mind is to get together with people at Spiritus. Reverend Myra Brown is now the pastor at Spiritus. There's so much that other churches can learn from their willingness to stand up and their willingness to bring the congregation in on making the decisions. That would be my first suggestion.
And I'm also curious to know if you ache for what you see even in our local Catholic Church, a declaration of bankruptcy, the pain that victims of abuse have suffered. You know, you grew up in the Catholic Church, Barb. Mm-hmm. Has that been difficult for you to witness that this week?
Absolutely. Going back bankrupt or claiming bankruptcy. We talked about this, Roz and I talked
about
this. Yeah,
yep.
Just this morning.
Yep.
It seems like the easy way out, you know. Where were they in taking action when these victims were pleading for someone to step in? Where were they? And if the church goes down, perhaps that's what needs to happen.
Well, my understanding is it's the diocese that is saying that they're bankrupt.
Yeah, that's right.
And I was questioning their assets because it seems to me that they have a lot more assets than were stated. Mm. But
can I say that you have made this Friday afternoon really remarkable? I'm really grateful for your time. And you've moved us and our listeners in many ways, and you are brave, as Roz, you said, be brave. You're brave to share your story, but it's going to help people. So my goodness, Barb, thank you for reaching out and giving us a chance to talk about it and tell this story. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Evan. Thank you for responding so quickly and to offering this hour to share our story.
Thanks very much, Evan. It has been a pleasure indeed. Thank you, listeners.
Yeah. Barb and Roz, beautiful. Role models in our community. Congratulations on your beautiful life. Our thanks to Dolores Parlato. Thank you, Dolores, for the great volunteering work. MRA Stein is the intern. Rob Braden, engineer. Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Love is love, y'all. Talk to you Monday.